My name is Angela Stevens, and I work for WGTS 91.9. Radio is a very intimate medium. We're 3 feet away from our friend at any given point of time, because that's about how far away the radio dial and the speakers are from our listeners. So Christian radio is a little different than normal radio in that we do have a faith-based message. But at the same time, we have to talk to normal everyday people. It's the intersection of culture and faith. Whatever's happening in the culture, put together a faith-based value with it, and that's what we do. Being at WGTS is a huge responsibility when you think about the kind of impact that a radio station like WGTS has on the community. It really humbles you. When we find out things like our radio station is being played at the Pentagon, our radio station is being played in the halls of the State Department, at Congress. We know of a few Congress members that have at some point said, yes, I have listened to WGTS. We've gotten letters from different people in high positions. We've even talked to some members of Secret Service that has told us, hey, there are people in the White House that we can't necessarily tell you about that listen to your radio station quite religiously. And when you realize that what I say today could influence somebody's day, could help them either make a really important decision, like what kind of legislation is going to go through, maybe a foreign policy decision, maybe it's the mindset of one of our troops, something like that. It's suddenly, the community gets a lot bigger. I want to leave people feeling good. I want people, when they turn me on, to have a friend and to also just kind of escape, whatever's happening in their life right now. If they just need a little vacation from it or just to kind of relax. I want to be able to provide that. The most important thing that we can do as Christians is make investments. But investment is also time. Investment is getting to know people and believing in them. And in radio, we're big, broad seed scatterers. We throw out seeds everywhere, and we hope that someone will help them take root. But it doesn't have to just be the seeds. We need gatherers, and we need soil tillers, and we need waterers, and we need people to be with those seeds as they begin to grow. Whatever you have a passion for, that's what God wants you to invest in.
Thank you, Angela. Angela is a member of the New Hope congregation, and she is making a difference in the world. And so many people's lives are touched that we have no idea of being touched through her ministry and others on WGTS. I want to welcome our television audience at this time, also the Life Center, people attending the Life Center in Glendale, Phoenix, Arizona. We welcome you to our service, and I'd love to hear from you and incorporate some of your experiences in my future sermons. So don't just listen, become a participant in what we're doing here as well. Because New Hope is extending its influence beyond just our local community to other places where God is leading. Eula Hall has no medical license, has no health training whatsoever, and yet she spends her life helping people who are sick and who are injured. She's had no formal training in politics or the law, but she spends her time helping people who are in need of service in her community. She has no social service degree, and yet she helps the disabled and the elderly find the services that they need. She's an advocate for the poor and the abused. And if you could give a PhD for compassion, for concern, and for tenacity, then Eula Hall would get that PhD. Instead, she's a dirt poor country girl in the Appalachian Hills of Kentucky. doing what she can. Her work is to relieve human suffering, and she's experienced plenty of it. She was one of 8 children, most of whom were born physically challenged. She herself had 5 children, one of whom was born physically challenged and deaf. One of the others died in infancy. But she determined that she was going to make a difference. And throughout her life, children around her in that part of the Appalachian Hills died early, died of illnesses that could be cured, such as tetanus, because there was no hospital, there was no doctor, there was no clinic, there was no medical facility of any kind at all. Eula left school after 8th grade. The high school was 20 miles away, but there were no buses to take the kids there. Her parents didn't own a car. No one else had a car, so all she had was 8 grades of education. But when she was 18 years of age, she determined what her life work was going to be. She would start a medical clinic in her community. Her job paid her $50 a week, but she saved and she saved and she saved, and the years went by until she had enough money to rent a little shack in a little place called Mud Creek. And in that shack, she opened her first little clinic, finding health professionals who would come and assist her there. $40 a week it cost to rent that shack. She had great difficulty finding doctors. A doctor could earn more in 1 month elsewhere than the citizens of Mud Creek earned in a whole lifetime. But she persevered. There was no place for doctors to stay that fit their lifestyle, so she'd put them up in her own home and feed them some of her great home cooking. And then she discovered a bonanza, foreign doctors coming and trying to get their green card. Part of the requirements was they had to work in a disadvantaged part of the country of America. So she got them to come, and her clinic began to grow and to prosper. And people would come over the hills and over the mountains, sometimes coming 100 miles to get medical care at her clinic. And then after 3 years, the clinic burned down, caught fire. The very next day, she said to her staff, "We're still going to keep going." And she called the telephone company and got them to come out that day and install a telephone on a tree right by where the clinic had been. She got a picnic table and set it up. All their supplies had been destroyed, but that didn't matter. People started to line up even on that day for help and for care. And when the school shut down for the summer holidays, she rented a room in the school for her clinic. And when school started up again, she found a trailer and moved the trailer onto that site. And then she started fundraising to raise money to build a new clinic on that site. You would find her out on the nearest highway at the time of the month when people received their social security checks and disability checks. And she'd have a little bucket out there on the highway collecting money. She made chicken dumplings and did fundraisers. And after a number of years, she had raised $102,000, enough to get a grant from the state. And they built a brand new clinic there that was air conditioned and that was heated and had enough room for all of these people. And she said it was a blessing that first clinic burnt down, because we would not have had what we have now. She would work there, get there at 8 o'clock in the morning, work there till late at night. Sometimes she had to drive the ambulance. The nearest hospital was 2 hours' drive away. The people needed hospital care. One time she was driving the ambulance and it slipped off the road and turned over and she broke her shoulder. But she was back at work the next day. Said, "Nothing's going to stop me. I'm here to serve the people." She did more than just work with the medical clinic. She studied law. She became advocates for people who were being discriminated against. She discovered that the wells were contaminated in her area, and she worked with the local government and with the state to finally convince them to put in a water treatment plant and a whole water plant so people could get fresh water. And we could go on and on with what she did in that place. She claims that if she had gotten a good education, she could have done so much more. So much more. What a difference she was already making in her community. Today, her phone rings without pause all day long. She suffers from arthritis and heart disease and has been hospitalized, but she still keeps working. Every day, 100 people walk through that clinic, coming along the winding roads to be helped. They now have 17 staff people working there, 2 full-time doctors and a part-time doctor. And when I was reading that story in a book called Unstoppable that was published in 1998, I thought, I wonder if Eula is still alive. She was born in 1927. So I got on the internet and I searched to see if I could find a phone number if that clinic was still in operation. And sure enough, Mud Creek Health Clinic was still there. So yesterday afternoon, I called the number and I said, is Eula Hall still alive? Also the receptionist, she's right here, she's on the phone, she'll be with you in a minute. And 30 seconds later, Eula Hall comes on the line. And I said to Mrs. Hall, I said, Mrs. Hall, I said, you must be round about 80 by now. Is that right? She said, yes, next month I'll celebrate my 80th birthday. And I said, well, are you semi-retired? You taking it easy? No, she says, I'm still here at 8 o'clock every morning. She said, I'm here till 5 to 6 in the afternoon. And then she said, I've been put on so many boards and committees, I guess because of what I'm done, that all my evenings are spent attending board meetings and committee meetings, seeking grants and helping other people in need. And I said, my, I said, do you still have any health problems? Oh, yeah, a few. She said, I've got 2 stents in my heart. I've got 2 stents in my kidneys. I have arthritis real bad, but she said, I can still drive, and I drive my car every day, and God is good to help me make a difference in that community. And I listened, and I just said some cheers. She lives on an annual salary of $22,000 still, but her life is dedicated to making a difference in that community. She said she's working right now with a group of disabled persons. She still has many people she's helping outside of that clinic to help people overcome the disadvantages that are around. She said, and then this really struck me, she said, I am here to serve people. I'm here to serve people. She said, what's the point of just sitting at home and just sitting at home when you could be out there helping people? And I thought, what a rebuke to those of us who complain about our situation. I doubt there's anyone in our audience today or listening on TV or Life Center who've had as many disadvantages as this individual. Only 8 grades of education, but a persistence and a tenacity to make a difference because she had a purpose in her life. She had a vision that inspired her. And as I was reading that story, I thought of a great experience in the Bible of another lady who made a difference helping the poor in her community. It's found in the book of Acts, chapter 9, where we read, starting with verse 36, that in Joppa there was a disciple named Tabitha, which when translated is Dorcas, the origin of the Adventist Dorcas Societies, used to be known that way, who was always doing good and helping the poor. About that time she became sick and she died. And her body was washed and placed in an upstairs room. And Lydda was near Joppa. So when the disciples heard that Peter was in Lydda, they sent 2 men to him and urged him, please, please, come at once. Peter went with them, and when he arrived, he was taken upstairs to the room, and all the widows stood around him, crying and showing him the robes and other clothing that Dorcas had made while she was still with them. Peter sent them all out of the room. Then he got down on his knees and prayed, and turning toward the dead woman, he said, Tabitha, get up. She opened her eyes, and seeing Peter, she sat up, and he took her by the hand and helped her to her feet. Then he called the believers and the widows and presented her to them alive. And this became known all over Joppa. And many people believed in the Lord. How could you not help believe when you saw something like that happen? Peter stayed in Joppa for some time with a tanner named Simon. Dorcas, Tabitha, impacted her community for good. She just didn't sit around and just do a regular job. But in addition to whatever she did to earn her living, She helped those that were in need. She sewed, she made clothes, she got food for them. She helped them, she trained them, she encouraged them. She made an impact on her community so that when she died, people were so impressed that they felt they had to do something. They didn't know what, so they said, we know Peter's in the next town, let's get him and have him come. Although I doubt that any of them believed that he would resurrect her and bring her back from the dead, because resurrections are very, very rare in the New Testament. We only know of four others besides this one. There were two children that Jesus raised, the son of the daughter of Jairus and the son of the widow of Nain, and then a man, Lazarus, that he raised. And then there's one other interesting story in the book of Acts. When Paul was preaching a long, long sermon, it says there was a young man called Eutychus who was sitting in the window, and they were up three stories. And he preached so long that he fell asleep and fell out of the window and killed himself, falling on the ground. And the people gathered round, and Paul came out. And I guess Paul, I don't know if Paul felt embarrassed or whether he felt his conscience or whatever for, you know, preaching such a long sermon. But anyway, it says that he prayed and God raised that young man, Eutychus, back up to life again. The vision statement of New Hope is to be an irresistible influence in our community. And we ask the question, if we were to suddenly vanish, and we've only been here just 1 year now in this community, but if we were to vanish, would anyone notice? Would anyone know that we have gone? When you move in your house, when you go somewhere else, will your neighbors miss you because of the good that you were doing in your street, in your community? At New Hope, we're trying to make a difference, and I can't share all of the things that are happening, there's too much of it, but our Kingdom Kids, for example, are involved in a program called Share Our Pantry, where they take food to the elderly. They're working with two of the local elementary schools, and now they've been asked not just to bring food, but to actually put on a program and sing and share with these elderly people in the retirement homes around our church. Our Pathfinder Club is extremely active in the community, and you can just run quickly through the next four slides there. Some of the pictures showing them, they're involved in helping the homeless in Baltimore, in providing food for elderly people. They're going to be out very soon collecting cans and food for Thanksgiving. When winter comes, they take blankets and other warm bedding to the homeless there in Baltimore, and you see some pictures of them as they're working in our Pathfinder Club. Is only 1 year old under Felix Nieto, and it's now 40 members strong and still growing and impacting the community for good. We've been involved in putting up homeless men in our church, in our previous location every winter. In a program called Winter Haven, we'd have anywhere from 15 to 30 men sleeping in our gymnasium. And we were even prepared to do it again this year, except we haven't had someone come through. It takes a lot of work to help organize that and get all the volunteers together to do that. And we'd love to continue doing it in our ministry. So here's a challenge to maybe some of you to step forward and say, I would like to. It's not just help. We need someone to be a leader to help continue that ministry of helping those homeless people when the cold winter months come. I remember vividly quite a few years ago when I pastored in Scotland, and Idi Amin threw the Indians out of Uganda, and 10 of those families came to Perth, Scotland. My wife and I felt so sorry for them. Here they come from the beautiful climate of Uganda to the cold, misty, damp climate of Scotland where there was snow and they were coming at the winter time. And so we went and we visited every one of those 10 families to see if there was any way we could help them. And one family we found was in great need. The lady was pregnant, was going to have a baby. They were living in very crowded conditions, so we opened up our home. We only had two bedrooms in our house, but we moved our kids into the dining room and put her and her new baby, when she got out of the hospital, in our house. And kept her there for a number of months until we found some subsidized housing where she could stay with her young son. She was Hindu. And it was so wonderful as we made friends with her and got to know her. She had all these pictures of Hindu gods up on the walls in her house. And as we just loved her and just talked about Jesus, but just very kind of casually, one day she asked for a picture of Jesus. So we gave it to her and she hung up it on the wall. And there was Jesus with the other gods. And the months went by, and one day we went in there and suddenly all the other pictures had gone of the other gods and only Jesus was up there on the wall. And then I came to America, but I still kept in contact. We paid for her and her son to come over and spend a summer with us when we were in Ohio. And one day when I was back in Scotland for a holiday, I had the privilege of baptizing her in our little church in Crieff. She became a Christian and an Adventist. And then about 8 years after that in Dundee, I was back for another holiday. See, holidays are good. I baptized her son, Rajan, who had become a Christian because of his mother and her influence. And they're both today. Rajan is now married. They're still faithful Seventh-day Adventists, although it's tough being a faithful Seventh-day Adventist in Scotland where there are so few Adventists there. But you can make a difference in your community. You can make an impact if we just look for people who are out there who are in need. One of our big dreams, and maybe it's my dream, and Pastor Ann has the dream as well. I'm dreaming that by this time, yes, September, this time next year, now we've got to get a move on, that on the front of our property, right on the road, there's going to be a fully functioning daycare center up and running. I know that we can do it. We have discovered that there's a tremendous need for more daycare in our area. And Howard County is the third richest county in America, a very affluent county, very hard to reach with the gospel. When people have lots of money, what do they need God for? But they all have kids, and the kids need care. And I can see a daycare center down on the front of our property where Christian people are caring for those kids and being an influence in those kids' lives and meeting the parents and being friends with those parents so that many of them will want to become Christians because the impact of you and who else is working in that daycare center as we're meeting the needs of our community. That's one of our visions and I believe it's going to happen. So please pray and encourage us to make that happen. But none of us have been challenged to make quite the difference that Peter was challenged to make. To come to that town, to come and meet with them and hear their wailings and their cries, and who's going to help us now? Who's going to pick up the challenge? Who's going to make the difference now? And God somehow impressed it upon his mind that God was ready to do something really powerful. And Peter dismisses them all. I'm not sure why. Maybe there's a little bit of doubt still in his mind, and he's going to pray, but if he doesn't get resurrected, he doesn't want to feel like a fool. And so the story says he pushes all of them out of the room, so he's by himself in that room. So if he fails, no one's going to know, because he hasn't told them what he's going to do. And he goes in, and he kneels, and he prays. And God performs an awesome miracle and raises her up to life. And I can just imagine that door opening. And the people are all outside wondering what's going to happen. And Peter comes out, and right behind him is Tabitha, is Dorcas. Wow! Can you see their smiles, their shouts, their cheers, saying, "This is tremendous, God!" And it gets around in the whole community, and the story says that many came to Jesus, many accepted Jesus, because of, not just because Tabitha was raised from the dead, but because they'd seen the impact of her life on the community. The impact of her life for good in meeting the needs of others around her. And that's what God has called us to be. That is what God has called his community to be. In Matthew 25, you remember at the very end, Jesus says, when he commends his people, he doesn't commend us for coming to church regularly. He doesn't commend us for giving faithfully our tithes and offerings. Important as all those are, he commends his people for what? For visiting the sick, binding up the wounds of the injured, clothing the naked, visiting the people in prison, helping those in our community that are in need. That's who Jesus commends. And wouldn't it be a shame if on that resurrection day there wasn't a single thing he could commend any of us for because we had not fulfilled his mandate to go out and share the gospel in tangible, real ways with those around us. In Los Cabos, Mexico, they come to this report by the dozens from some of the poorest communities in Mexico, children and seniors trapped in a life of silence. They cannot hear. And Bill Austin, and you see his picture up on the screen, a self-made multimillionaire with very little education formed a hearing aid company. And then through his Starkey Hearing Foundation, he has helped more than 200,000 people here by providing free hearing aids for them. In this part of Mexico, where the average income is less than $10,000 a year, a hearing aid costs $3,000. And it's his mission to spread as many of these as he can to help these people here. Six-year-old Anna Karina Ventura and her family live in a worn-down trailer. Anna has never heard her mum's voice. She's never spoken a word. And he's going to give her a hearing aid. And her mum in Spanish says, "I think I'm going to cry when I hear her voice for the first time." And Bill Austin fits her with this hearing aid. And when he turns it on, suddenly a whole new world opens up for that little girl who's never heard anything before, has never spoken anything before. And spontaneously, she lets out a cheer just like that. And Bill Austin turns to her and he says, "The first word I want you to say is this." And he looks at her mama and he turns her towards her mama and say, "Would you say mama?" And the first word she says in her life is mama. And her mother just breaks down in tears. What a difference Bill Austin made in the life of that little girl and the life of thousands of others by sharing some of what God has given him. When they asked him what it was like to do this, he said, "It gets addictive." He said, "I see this 100 times a day, and it just fills my heart with joy and with gladness to see people come alive because of a little something that I can do for them." And Bill Austin is making a difference in his community and in the communities where he shares what God has given him to do. Where do you begin when you want to make a difference? Consider this person's story one time who said, "When I was a young person, I wanted to change the world. I found it was difficult to change the world, so I tried to change my nation. And when I found I couldn't change the nation, I began to focus on my town. I couldn't change the town as an older person. I tried to change my family. And now as an old person, I realize the only thing I can change is myself. And suddenly I realized that if long ago I had changed myself, I could have made an impact on my family. My family could then have made an impact upon the town. That influence would have an impact upon the nation, and eventually it would have impacted the whole world." And so it begins by not making excuses, by not rationalizing, but by looking at your own life and saying, "Okay, right now, how am I going to make a difference? Doesn't matter what education or lack of education, I can make a difference for God. God, show me what your purpose is for me and the influence you want me to have in my community." Next week, we're going to look at the difference actually we can make upon a whole nation. And New Hope is making a difference in this nation. And we're going to look at some of those experiences next week. But in addition, but this is kind of like a continued story, so I want to make sure you come back. In addition, we're going to look at some specific principles that will help you. We kind of talked about inspirational things today, but we're going to look at some basic principles that if you follow will help you make an impact in your family, in your life, in your community, at work. So don't miss coming back next week. Because God has called us here in this world to be salt and to be light, to be an influence for Him and an influence for good. Amen.